In this episode of the You, Me, and IBMI podcast, I sit down with Nina Ng, an experienced IBMI support rep who started in the Philippines and currently works out of IBM Singapore. Those of us who take cases in the U.S. during the day are very happy when we see that one of our cases came back and Nina got it while we were sleeping and she was able to either give a great answer or move the call in a positive direction. Nina Ng is one of the best of us, and we're glad she's out there putting the global into the IBMI Global Support Center. Thanks for listening. Isn't it like the tip of Malaysia, kind of? Right? It's right in the end there. So, God, I sound really stupid. I'm probably going to have to, I'm going to edit that heavily.
Yeah.
Welcome to You, Me, and IBMI.
You and I have both worked here for, I think, a long time without really knowing each other. When did you start at IBM?
Well, for IBM itself, if my memory is correct, it's about 19 years. But, my IBM journey spans to three regions. So it begins with IBM Philippines as a local support, and then Singapore doing local team projects. And I started my 1.5 level support for ASEAN region.
So what does that mean?
When customer calls in for ASEAN countries like Philippines, Singapore, Malaysia, Brunei, before it escalated to level two, us in Singapore, the ASEAN countries have something like a support center first. So we try to filter the calls.
Sure.
And then if it is beyond our knowledge or beyond our skills, then we escalate it to level two, which is the IBM US team. So that sure. is how the 1.5 level support works. Then, I worked for about 2 years in that area in Singapore. Then I moved to join and started contributing to IBM Global Support Team.
Yeah. So same building, same town.
Yeah.
Singapore is one city.
Yes, Singapore is really small. They say you can travel Singapore in one day. Technically, yes. But if you're going to, different areas, maybe not.
Sure. I mean, because Singapore was, I know a little bit that at one point, right, what is now Singapore was a part of Malaysia.
And then there was
some turmoil, and Singapore itself, right? Isn't it like the tip of Malaysia, kind of? Right? It's right in the end there. Am I wrong?
Yeah, just a small part of it, and then some people from gathered, and then they decided to have their own country. So and become independent.
So I sound really stupid. I'm probably gonna have to. I'm gonna edit that heavily.
Yeah, I just recently got my citizenship.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, I just had it last March. During the citizenship process, there are some kind of examinations about the Singapore history and so on.
1965.
Yeah, it's a Singapore birth name, because Singapore just recently have SG60, which is a 60th birthday of Singapore.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, and we had really a good celebration here, a big one.
Well, everything I've heard about Singapore and the people I know who have been there say it's very beautiful. And it's a very international place, and that they, you know, if you can imagine a place that, I don't know, maybe skipped over. Rochester.
Yes. What? And, you know, a couple of Rochester people came here, got assigned here. So I met that, I met some of them, and, you know, we had a really good time here.
Yeah, I bet that would be an awesome place to go.
You know, Adam? Yeah, Adam, Adam Braham, yeah, he was here.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, Jeff Hensley, yeah, he was Hensley, also yeah. Here. Mervin as well. Mervin is for quite some time he was here for some assignments.
Yeah, he's been everywhere, I think.
yes.
You know, one thing that was really I was interested by is to hear that you're actually from the Philippines.
Yes, I'm Filipino.
Yeah, so it was not surprising to me that you also said that you love singing and performing on stage. Or that you had done that because my son dated a girl from Cebu for about 3 years. I think the Philippines has one of the most beautiful and colorful cultures and proud cultures that I've ever seen. I've just ever known. Where are you from in the Philippines?
I'm from Manila.
Oh, you are? Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Big city. What languages do you speak?
We speak Tagalog. Filipino language.
Right,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and then,
yeah, because there it's Tagalog, and then in Cebu they have like Cebuano. It's like
yes. So it's a different dialect, but Filipino is the the native language. Tagalog is can consider is one of the major dialect in Philippines, but okay. When you say what language do you speak is Filipino. Okay. So Filipino is a language. Tagalog is likely considered as dialect.
Yeah, and I never took a computer class. I went to school to be an English teacher, so I'm always interested, kind of how people got started.
I earned my bachelor's degree in mathematics, major in computer science from University of Santo Tomas, And this university is a very old university. It's like a century, 100 years, more than 100 years. Yeah. So it is very popular in Philippines as well and respected university.
I think it's such a good idea to, when people go to school, to kind of generalize a little more. So like you said, you had a degree in mathematics, you said?
Yes, degree in mathematics, but I major, because during that time, during my younger days, there is no bachelor's degree directly as computer science. It always goes as, major, your degree is mathematics and you major it computer science. So so that's how it goes during my days.
I think that makes a lot of sense because, it's not that math never changes, but math is like more core knowledge.
Yes.
And so if you have the math degree, you can get a math degree and then be like, well, I want to be, I want to do computer stuff. But then if you decide, well, I don't really like the computer stuff, you still have the math.
Yes, that's correct.
Whereas if you just went into computer science, and then later we're like, well, I really don't like programming or whatever. Yeah. But I really like, I wish I would have had more of that math part, then you didn't, it wouldn't have as much. So, yeah, I think that's a good, that's a good idea. So at in the support center now, you're still So, you know, it's like that Office Space. It's like that Office. You've seen the movie Office Space before?
Yeah, I used to have my office space in IBM Singapore, but when I moved to...
No. No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, there's a funny movie called Office Space.
Oh, no. I haven't watched that one. I haven't heard it.
Okay, yeah. Oh, it's so good. But so it's about this guy who he doesn't like his job. And he goes to a psychologist, and while the psychologist is hypnotizing him to relax and be more at peace, the psychologist dies.
Oh, okay.
And he doesn't come out of it. He's always relaxed. So he doesn't like his job. He goes to work, and he doesn't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He does whatever he wants, and he's happy. And so people in the movie, some people are brought in to downsize the company. And anyway, they're interviewing different people. And one of the people that they interview, it's very unclear what his job is. And what they say to the man is they say, "So what do you say you do here?" Because it wasn't obvious what his job was.
Yeah.
So, much like the movie Office Space, Nina, what do you say you do here?
Well, I got so many things doing in IGSC or you know, IBM Global Support Center. I do support different areas like work management as my primary. And then I do help also access client, okay. Navigator, data access.
Yep.
Yeah, IFS and small products. And occasionally, okay. I do handle also Save Restore. And aside from...
Oh, I've seen that. You're very helpful with Save Restore.
Yeah. And aside from, you know, technical contributions in IGSC, I am also a team lead for the AP off triage team.
Oversee
team operations. Yeah. And then at times I also do duty manager. So sometimes you will see me doing, you know, duty management role.
Yeah, you had mentioned that the other night when we were texting about when to get together. You said, well, sometimes, you know, when I'm doing the duty manager role, that wouldn't be a real convenient time to be recording.
Right.
You know, a podcast because you might get busy.
Yeah, I have to keep my line open when I'm doing duty manager because I have to respond to, you know, to our clients escalating cases.
You know, that's actually an interesting area of support, that we have people who are very good at handling complex situations and resolving customer issues with how they are interacting with support. Well, how long have you been working as a duty manager?
A year and a half.
How do you like it?
First, it was stressful, but yeah, it's good because you develop yourself, meeting people, different kind of people, different temper. So you learn from it. You learn handling people. I'm starting to like it, you know. I'm not starting. I'm liking it already. Yeah. So I am more comfortable now, compared last year. Yeah. So I get to do more duty manager during my shift. If there's opportunity, I take it.
Well, that's good. It's so important to have the right people in that job. I think sometimes I tend to get kind of flustered and I can have a short temper.
Yeah.
Like yesterday, I was on the phone with a customer and I was telling her what to do and trying to help her guide her with a net server issue she was having. And I was guiding her through how to stop and start net server. And this other person that was kind of like a contractor, or this other person that some other third party that she relied on sometimes was on the call. And he was talking over me and telling her what to do and was using these old commands that like weren't working. And I didn't get mad, but I just got really frustrated at the guy. And at one point I told my customer, I don't think I said, don't listen to that, but he was completely wrong.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the customer, you know, he wasn't working for her company. He was like some other guy, you know? So I was like, please don't do that. I said, just do this. So I probably, if I'd had more duty manager work, I would have known to be a little kinder, but sometimes I can just get a little like, ugh, it can be frustrating.
I think being in duty manager role for quite some time now, it really helps my temper to improve, you know? It's good. It's good. It helps a lot, you know, when it comes to managing cases, especially those tough ones. And then, so it helps a lot.
You know, that's one area of support that we haven't really gotten into that I don't know. I think it's an area that customers might be interested in, but the idea of, like you said, with case management, like the customers know how to open a call. Right. They know how to open a call. They used to call and then now they can open them, either call or open them electronically. But once they open the call, they don't really know how we handle it. They just know that their case gets updated at some point. Do you have any techniques that you use to kind of maintain and keep track of your calls?
Keep track of my calls.
Like you have like what? How many calls in your backlog right now? And for customers that don't know, any call that comes in gets assigned to one of us. And then that call becomes what we call part of our backlog. You know, calls we got to get to, things we got to fix so that we can close them. So do you have any methods you use to maintain your backlog?
Yes. For me, normally, when the call comes in, of course, I would respond to client. If I got an answer, then I would put it right away. But if I need more information, I would ask client and some data. But if I have an answer, tentative answer to the, you know, to the basic description of their case, then I will put it in there, the possible answers. But if that doesn't resolve their issue, then I also have, you know, outline what are the things I need for analysis. Okay. Once they send in those information to me, I would have analyzed and then respond back to client.
Yeah.
And I would set my the case delayed waiting for their response or feedback for 2 to 3 days, and then I will follow up with them.
Yeah.
So that's the way I normally do.
Do you keep a list? I know some people keep like post-it notes on their desk of that they have.
I actually have reports. I created my own report that has a next action date on the report. So I will review those cases that has missed the next action date or those cases that has, you know, waiting for, let's say, PDFs from development. Sometimes it takes a while. So I have reports to review and then follow up when is it going to be available or what? Because, sometimes we need to do manual follow-up with our cases. So I do keep a track on those reports. I love doing reports for my cases. So to closely monitor those statements.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And you created that report in what? In Salesforce or some other tool?
Yes, in Salesforce. I have a few reports in Salesforce.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I don't do that. I kind of have ideas for things, Like I'll say, oh, I should do this. And then I'll spend some time thinking about, oh, how I should do that. And then I'll start it, but then it's very hard for me to get into new habits.
Oh.
That must be why our customers love you so much, if you're so closely monitoring their calls and being so responsive to them and their problems.
Yeah, I just hope that they don't feel anxious every time I follow up with them. But so far, they're fine. They're happy with the follow-ups.
Oh, yeah. Well, why would they feel anxious?
Well, sometimes I can be a dear customer. Is there any update from the, from the last recommendation or what? Then they would say, some would say, we've been busy. Sorry for the delays. But they're fine, yeah. In the end, I would get a survey that, Nina do a very close follow-up on the cases. They like it, you know. So I just continue what I'm doing.
I totally see what you mean. That to us, when we get a call comes in, we see it as, oh, this customer has a problem. But sometimes it's not that big of a problem. So, and customers are busy. So they'll get on to other things, other projects. And let's say like a printer wasn't working right and they report the problem. Then we think, oh, this printer, it's not working. They can't, you know, it's a problem, you know. And then they, maybe after 3 days, they forgot about it. Or maybe they just, it's not as important as other things. So then when we ask them, you're basically describing the situation where when you go back to the customer and say, is there any update on this? They haven't even looked at it.
Yeah, and then it reminded them that, yay, yeah, I have a problem. Yeah, I forgot already.
Do you remember that you actually had this problem in the first place? That's funny. Yeah. Well, the system is very reliable, so one problem usually is not a big deal. So, you know, when we do this podcast and I sent out, I like to send out those kind of preliminary pre-questions saying, hey, yes, think about this or think about that. And one of the questions that I asked you was if you had any interesting cases or customer situations that were kind of funny that you ran into lately. And you said that there was nothing you could think of at the moment.
Yay.
But what was the last customer? I'll ask it a different way. What was the last customer case you had that you thought was kind of funny?
Everything is serious.
No.
No, I couldn't think of any funny cases. I take it seriously.
Do you remember the first call that you ever took?
First call? Wow, that was a long time ago. I cannot remember.
Sure. No,
we have, you know, in the center, we have like 20 calls, 15 to 25 calls in a day.
But you only have one first call.
Yeah. But
so when you would have started, it would have been, we would have been live call, right?
Oh, my first call wasn't live, you know.
Well, it
it wasn't a live call. Because last time, there is a Taurus team. We are the Taurus. And then off triage last time does not take a live call. It's always a callback. Yeah, it's not a live.
Sure.
So
okay.
Yeah, so it's but I remember my first call, I was with Barry, you know Barry Thompson?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, okay. He's a manager, right? Then he was in Singapore and then we have this introduction for, you know, being an off-reach team. He helped me to set up my laptop, everything, and then he yeah. said, "Okay, let's try to have your first case. Take that case."
Oh, that's fun.
Wow. You know, I was like, It's my first time, you know. It's not the first time to take case, but it's my first time to take a call with the manager beside me. And then luckily, when I got that case, it's not that very tough one, and I was able to respond and resolve it on a first communication. So I was very happy.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that was the experience on my very first call in IGS.
Oh, that's perfect. Mine was very different. I think I've said this before on the podcast, but mine, when I picked up the phone, I couldn't speak. My mouth didn't work. And the person who was with me was looking at me like, you have to start talking. And after a couple seconds of me not being able to say anything because I was just so scared, then she quickly turned on her microphone and fixed the problem, and then she hung up. And then I turned to her and I said, well, we fixed that one.
Oh, but that's funny.
I've tried to be a little better since then.
Yeah.
So
every first is always tough one, you know. But even though we are not live on my first call, it feels different. Even though I work on cases with local teams, but having it in global support is different. I would say when I was in local team, the cases I handled locally sometimes is different from cases I take from US, EMEA. For some reason, it's different.
What do you mean?
In terms of how to say technically different descriptions, it is not common. Something like some cases in EMEA is not common in Singapore. For example, like language support. So something different. So.
Right. Like the fact that on the system, like typically in the US, taking US calls, we don't get a lot of what we call national language calls, right? Or cases where you can have multiple languages installed and working on the system at the same time. Is that kind of what you mean?
Yes. Now, Singapore may have multiple language customers, but, you know, as they know, I'm Filipino, and I don't speak Chinese, and I don't read Chinese. So when there is a call that is, you know, a secondary language that have a, you know, Mandarin or the traditional Chinese,
sure.
I am not the one who takes it. I would have my other local colleague to take it. So, but sure. When you're in IGSC, we take it, you know? So it's something like a challenge. It's different. So that is one of the challenge in IGSC compared to being a local support.
I think also in some countries, the customers have different expectations of support. I know, for example, we'll get cases from Japan where they are very, they really want, you know, some customers, if they ask you a question and you say, this is the answer. But you don't really explain why. In some cases, they just want to know what the answer is. And if they'll, you know, they're it's more black and white. But I know sometimes with our Japanese customers, I know sometimes, you know, they really want to know more about the root of the issue or if there was a problem, kind of how it was resolved. And sometimes we can help them with that and sometimes we can't. But it is one of the,
culture.
It's more of a cultural difference that way.
Right. Most of my Japanese cases is more technical, very technical, that they try to dig in more and more. They always have why question. So, I think it's more culture. They are more technical, more deep technical. They always wanted to know why. That's the fun of it, you know, being in Global Support Center, you encounter different cultures, different ways. You learn. Yeah. One of my clients in Austria, he's a German guy. And he talks very, you know, he talks scary, you know, because his intonation, it feels like it gives you an angry, you know, it feels like he's angry. Then suddenly when we were talking, then suddenly he laughed. I didn't know that he was joking, you know, because the way he talked, it was like he's upset or he was like angry and very serious. And then suddenly he laughed. The way he laughed is really, you know, he's happy or what. That was, okay, he's not angry. So from then on, I don't take the intonation that much as, because sometimes it could be just the way they talk. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really true. That's something you probably get very good at, working cases from all over the world like you do. Because, of course, not only do you get cases because working, you know, your day, our night here, you know, you get cases from that area of the world, but you also get cases from our area of the world because we'll have Sub 1 cases that we're working that come back at night. And they need expertise at night. So you guys get experience with all kinds of people at all times from everywhere. So you just get, I think, probably get really good at dealing with a wide variety of customers. That's a good skill.
Yeah, it took time, but it's a good experience.
You said you work in work management, and this kind of feedback form I had, you had talked about security. And he said, one of the questions I said, do you have a best practice you could recommend to help customers avoid an issue or improve system reliability, performance, or ease of use? And you had talked about advising customers not to make
any changes at one go.
Yeah. What did you mean about that? Because you also said, and go for one password level and complexity. What did you mean by that?
Okay, because I have cases where customers say, "Hey, we have a security requirements that we need a mixed case password. Password should be minimum 14 and then maximum of 20, something like that."
Sure.
And then their password level is at 0. So if you have few password level at 0, it is non-mixed case. And then at the same time, it supports only up to 10 characters. So most of the clients, they will say, can I change this Q password level and then the password rules to set the based on our requirements? I would always say, yes, you can, but I would always suggest to, okay, just change your few password level first, then test your password, test your application. Sure. If it works, then you start changing your, you know, the length of your passwords, and then change the mixed to mixed case instead of changing everything at one go. So at least you do step by step, and then at least if something wrong, you know which one is wrong in your step because you just did it one by one. So you can always go back to that. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. What else have you been working on lately?
Okay, I'm doing monitoring the new IBM on-site software maintenance contract entitlement. So this is only available for the time being for AP regions. This contract entitles the client to have on-site support for break, fix, or defects. There are few types of on-site software maintenance. One is the basic SOAR or software on-site maintenance. This basic SOAR, the engineer can go to client and assist client for collecting some system dumps, or the engineer can go clients to help them diagnose their issues and help them to analyze the problem and give them resolution as well.
And that's not a hardware thing. That's a software thing. Okay.
Right. And then for the basic SOAR, sometimes customer is not familiar in applying PTFs, right? So if, let's say, the remote technical support us have a requirement for client to apply a fix, and the client is not familiar on how to do that, then the basic SWOR, the software on-site request, can takes place, and then us in RTS can request the local team to go to the client and apply PTFs for them.
Really? How did that get started? Because if somebody said here, like in the U.S. right now, if somebody said, you know, I need help putting on a PTF, we wouldn't, that there's not a, we would just say, well, look, well, there's a document, maybe we have a video about it, but we don't have a process where we would send someone out to help them put that on. How is it that that got started over there? Do you remember, do you know the history of that?
In Singapore, at least, we have customers requesting for help that they need someone who is more familiar in diagnosing their problem and to apply PTFs for them. But this is always on-call service, you know, for our service, right? So because of these many requests in-country, they built this contract, on-site software maintenance contract, okay, that needs software, the basic software maintenance, the SWAMA.
Sure.
To bundle it. And then, so that these clients that needs more experienced engineer to help them out on-site. So this is where it started.
Okay.
I believe per hour bill is much more expensive than having this bundle, the basic SWORM.
So it's pretty expensive?
No. What I mean is the per call bill. We call it per call, is the per hour bill.
Okay, sure.
That is more expensive than having the basic SWORM included in the basic SWAMA.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah, and then this contract has three types. One is the basic software on-site request. Then we have also the advance. The advance would have all the privileges that the basic has. Plus, it provides quarterly check services and install PTFs that is not related to defect issues. So meaning, if you want to update your PTF, QM, group PTF, this is included in advance work. Yeah. And we also
have... Oh, that's really nice.
Yes. And you know, sometimes when you apply PTF and if you don't have this SWOR, it takes hours to complete the installation of PTF, right? So it makes...
Sure.
It can be very expensive if someone from on-site goes to customer... someone from local team go to the customer site and do the PTFs for them. So it will be very expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we also have the premium tier. The premium tier have all the basic and the advanced. Plus, the on-site engineer can help setting up, setting up new ACS workstation, or help setting up configuration change to customer. And then they can do some, they can do some software compatibility analysis before do OS upgrade, and they do basic performance analysis. And also, if let's say customer is new, they don't have the backup restore plan, they can help with that.
With planning.
Yeah, it's a very good contract, I would say.
Yeah, that sounds like a great service. Well, Nina, it has just been so nice to talk to you and to meet you today. It's always nice to meet new people that I've worked with for a long time but never had the privilege of meeting.
I also enjoy talking.
Thanks for joining us on You,
Me,
and IBMI.